Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Let's Talk Assassin's Creed, your number one podcast for all things Assassin's Creed.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to episode 134 of Let's Talk Assassin's Creed. We are doing an episode tonight that we've been kind of planning for months and months and months. And I actually, Declan, it feels a bit cheeky because you and I have done very little work for this one. Let's be clear. But let me explain why. So welcome back to the show, first of all, Michael, also known as the Lord Raylis. I realised, I think this is your fourth or fifth appearance on the show, and it's great to have you back.
Thanks for having me back. Yeah, it's my fifth one. I was just checking yesterday because I was trying to remember how many podcasts I had done so far.
Yeah, professional podcast guest. That's awesome. And you proposed this idea, perhaps the last time we spoke, which I think was maybe in December or January. And we're going to be talking about the Brotherhood of Venice board game. Although, board game, having read your article today, and I went and watched Access the Animus unboxing video, board game kind of sells it short. This thing is amazing.
Yeah, I would say maybe tabletop game would be better, especially because it has minifigures and stuff, figurine game, role-playing game to a point, I think would be fine.
I wanted to get into that. Sorry, Declan, go on, mate.
I was just going to say, I don't think role-playing game is fair to say, because we all know Assassin's Creed's not a role-playing game. I'm sorry. I'm in a spicy mood lately.
Did you hear that already? We're only like 2 minutes in. Unbelievable. We'll say right at the start for people listening. So this is an audio show, obviously, but potentially we're going to be talking about things that are more visual. So what we'll do in the video version, and if we can fit it in the space that's allowed in the show notes on the audio version, we're going to put links to Michael's article where he does a thorough review of the game, some of his playthrough. Michael's also got a great Twitter thread where he kind of, which is the work you did, Michael, is amazing, where he documents his kind of step-by-step, turn-by-turn playthrough. And I'll put a link to Access the Animus unboxing video as well, which I think between the three, if you've never played the game and perhaps never would, between the three, you'll get a really good understanding of what this is that we're talking about. So let's get that kind of admin stuff out the way first. And let's get into the discussion.
Yeah.
So am I okay to start?
You have my permission. So you don't need my permission.
I'm going to say I am slightly jealous because I have actually been following the Creed of Venice since it was a Kickstart project. I've known about it for ages. And one of the things when James actually brought this up, Michael, that I've really wanted someone to talk to about is how does this tabletop RPG essentially manage to capture the story and the fluidity of the games? And is it actually possible to tell such an in-depth story from the games onto a tabletop RPG?
Yeah, most definitely. You know, I don't remember where I had initially heard of the game, but it was after the Kickstarter had closed, which I was extremely disappointed, because I would have jumped on it easily, especially because they had some exclusivity items like a exclusive figurine for Ezio and an exclusive tower that you would use for synchronization points. But the game itself, in the core... the core box, the Brotherhood of Venice, you know, and even in the expansions, it captures the gameplay extremely well, because in your box, you're given a rule book, which has, and I've got all of my rule books in front of me just to have them nearby for reference. It has 51 different rules that you'll learn over the course of the game. And as soon as you open the rule book, after seeing a beautiful two-page artwork of the four assassins from the core game overlooking the people of Venice below, it gives you the contents of the book with images, so you know exactly what each item is called and the name of the different figurines and just boxes and everything. And then it starts in with how to read the rule book, and it says, you know, learning through play, you know, rule point zero, And it will note that, you know, first memories or missions include number rule points and blue diamonds. As soon as you encounter one in the campaign book or on a card or during on a token during play, come back to the rule book and read that point specifically. Or if you want to, you can just read the entire book up front and then go ahead and start playing. And it tells you a little bit of, you know, number of players. Can you play solo? Can you play, you know, with up to four people? Or you can play solo, or you can play up to four players. And it notes one of the first mistakes that I had made playing is that if you play solo, you have to play at least two of the four included assassins. I did not, and I had to restart after, I think, 2 days of playing. I had to completely rebox the game and start from scratch because I ended up locking myself I soft locked a tabletop game essentially to where I couldn't do anything because I had no enemies to attack. But it tells you just the first page. It says starting off, these are how the envelopes work, and you have a collection of how many envelopes was it? 33 envelopes in the box, and it tells you, you know, how to open the envelope, and you'll pull out two sets of cards, one large, one small. And on the large cards, it gives you a very red card that says warning. And it says, read this card before taking other cards out of the envelope. And for an example, when setting up your assassin character for the first time, it says, reveal the large assassin apprentice card and leave the other cards in the envelope without revealing them, even though it does still show pictures, so you know what they look like. And it helps you set up your assassin board because you have a little character board in front of you, almost like your menu in-game. And you have your character art card right in the middle. You have your health down at the bottom. And surrounding the character are your action points because you get three actions per turn, though you can accumulate more. You have your hidden blade, your melee weapon, and your range weapon, and then you have a small equipment stash that can hold up to 5 items. And then on the sides, the outsides of the actual board, are 4 numbered spaces that are for you to attach your individual assassin skills. Think like the skills that you get in your skill tree. And at the very bottom, there's a small sliver for you to put where your armor is to show the additional health gained from that armor, starting with 3 additional health. You can get all the way up to 9 health total, but I think I may have maxed mine out, but I know I definitely got to at least 8 health cubes at one point. But then when you get to your campaign book, you've got your character started up, you're ready to go. It starts you off with a synopsis of the level. So as an example, sequence 0, memory 0.1, which is one of the tutorial levels, is called Prisoners, and it tells you about how Ezio Auditore is one of the greatest assassins of all time. It was him who picked our small group of assassins to help him prepare for his face-off with the Templar Cesare Borgia. What an honor. And then it notes that Cesare is trying to conquer a fortress in Novara, and Ezio is about to confront his longtime enemy and finally get rid of him. So we're at the end of Brotherhood at this point. We have been tasked with creating a diversion, and we managed to distract the Templars long enough for Ezio to enter the fortress. However, we had to give up our freedom for that. We are now prisoners. We managed to warn the Brotherhood with a carrier pigeon, and we know that a group of assassin apprentices are on their way to rescue us. Once freed, we can move up to the next phase of the plan to help Ezio. So now you know what your backstory is for this mission. What is your motive? And then it breaks down the setup of the map. It gives you it tells you what tiles to take out, and the collection of tiles in the game are a mixture of indoor tiles with either 2 to 3 walls that you can't surpass, street tiles with or without walls, roof tiles with or without walls, physical locations like fast travel stations, if you remember the underground system that you would unlock in Brotherhood, as you were rebuilding Rome, those little stations are your fast travel stations. So they allow you to get onto the map and exit the map. And then reminder tokens, little red bases that indicate whether or not you've been exposed, or if you're incognito, you would have your colored character token, and each character is color-coded. Objective bases, and all these different kinds of things. And it tells you, this is how you'll set up your map. This is where you're going to put your objectives. This is where you're going to put your enemy figurines, and then put a few little notification reminder tokens so that you know that, you know, here, here, and here, you have to, you know, avoid this enemy or something like that. And it just, it tells you how to set up your map and which rules to read as you're doing so. Then it tells you to open up your envelope for that mission. And from there, it will give you cards to build your event deck, which determine what happens each turn. And it's anything from, oh, you found a secret passage, so now you can sneak to a canal space without having to spend, say, five actions to reach from point A to point B in the canal. Or during this turn, you can't use your sword, or you can't use your sword because there's more guards around. Or, you know, a guard got on top of the tower, you have to take him out before you can climb it and synchronize. You know, things like that. It also helps you build your equipment deck so that you can find items on the bodies as you loot them, or you a chest deck, which is usually a predetermined amount of cards, normally five, that will go for anywhere from 3 to 5 levels. And by the end of that set amount of levels, those cards would be discarded for a new batch of chests. And it's one of the ways that you see your equipment become stronger as you play through the game. And then it tells you your objectives. So for an example, for prisoners, the memory objective, much like the DNA strands in the video games, says unlock the 4 assassin cells by spending 1 action on each of the squares. And then it gives you 100% sync, the optional objectives, this one called Eyewitness. To get this 100% sync, complete the memory with no more than 1 assassin apprentice becoming exposed after a detection test. And the detection test, much like the stealth in the game, is a line of sight thing. If the guard sees you because you're in their space, you'll run a set of detection dice, which have eyeballs with alarms or blank spaces, a 6-sided dice with 3 images, and you would roll that dice, and depending on how it landed and what the current alarm setup is on the map, whether it be not active because there's no alarm right now, or it's blaring because the guards know you're here and they're trying to find you, will determine how easily they see you. And then from there, you're set up and ready to go. You may have some additional rules, like special rules for the map. And they're like, you know, make sure that you keep in mind that you can't do this, or keep in mind that you need to read these rule points before you start so you have a better understanding. And from there, much like in the game, you have what you're supposed to do, and then you get to do it however you choose to, with the limitations of what equipment do you have in front of you, what is your current skill level, you know, do you have a weapon, things like that. As an example, for that first mission, you don't have weapons yet. The only thing that you're given at the beginning of the mission is parachutes. So you can't technically attack guards because you have no weapon, but you can use a parachute from one roof to another. And when you land on that targeted rooftop, you can actually take out a guard as you land. So it's a good way of clearing the roofs, because at this point in the game, they don't have any new guards coming in. And then from there, you can move to your different assassin cells, unlock them, and then sneak around to the other one. So a mixture of rolling your dice to not be detected and using your equipment on hand to take out your guard gives you that video game feel, except you're watching it from above the entire time. And then at the end of the level, once you've actually completed it, and it says in the rule book or in the campaign book, after it's told you how the level is built, what is the purpose of the level, it notes in red, do not turn this page until you've completed this memory, because it's going to tell you what happens next. And so it would give you synchronization. And this one isn't going to be much of a spoiler, though I think that this entire podcast is probably going to be spoiler heavy. But this specifically notes, great, we freed the assassins thanks to the young apprentices. Cesare's forces are leading the assault against the fortress and have already managed to take over some of the buildings. We will soon put Ezio's plan of sabotaging Cesare's gun into action. And then it tells you to take your reward card, which actually ends up giving you a common sword and the a common sword for each of the assassins, and the character Claudio gets his hidden blade. And then it tells you how to record your success in the Diary of Memories, which is at the back of the book, which is very much like the DNA strands from the games, where it will show, did you complete your objective using a little sticker? Did you, how much experience did you gain from the mission? And it has an experience bar that you'll circle your, or highlight or mark, or however you want to do it. Mark your progress as you go, and then ask you how many attempts did it take for you to beat this level. And down the line, it'll also start keeping track of the contracts that you fulfill in your Brotherhood. So very much does it feel like you're playing the game, just from a much more RPG standpoint, because your attacks, your detections, and your damage received from guards is all based off of dice. I said once in my article that I felt at one point I was playing Oblivion, or not Oblivion, I was playing Morrowind from the Elder Scrolls series again, because I would be on the square with a guard, yet I'm not doing any damage because I'm not rolling the dice I need. You know, I may not be taking any damage or any kind of retaliations, but there are times where you may end up getting badly damaged to the point to where you reach a critical health and you have to heal yourself within the next turn, or your assassin is down for the count and has to be hospitalized and replaced with an assassin apprentice, which has less skills than the regular assassin does. So very much does it feel like the video game. You just don't have the hours of conversations and cutscenes. You just have an opening spiel, a closing spiel, and then the middle is you figure out what's going on. And additional event cards or special event cards may come into play, where you enter a space and it says, as soon as you enter the space, flip this card over and boom, you've been ambushed. It's like, oh, okay, wow, okay, cool. So now there's something like this mission felt like it was going to be really easy, and nope. You know, there's I'm now surrounded by guards and they're flooding into the map, and now I've got to get out of here in like three turns, or this building's going to be set on fire, or, you know, it's like, okay, cool. So there is risk, there is reward, there is a lot of nerve, you know, in the game, to where it's like, I don't know what I'm going to do because I'm going to die if I do this, this, or this. I have to really sit here and plan out, what am I about to do? So it's even a little bit of a strategy game to a point.
How do they... Again, this is my ignorance because I've never played a game like this. You've already commented on the dice, and that's something I really wanted to ask. So how much of it is... Let me ask a two-part question. So
Sure. The
story, I guess, is linear, but you have the freedom to complete each memory how you want within the rules of the game. But how do they balance you planning your plan of attack and preparing your character against the randomness of the dice? And did they strike a good balance of sort of rewarding your planning, but also throwing in, like you just described, those moments of panic or those moments of chaos?
Yeah, they definitely do. So you have four phases in the game. You have your event phase, which is at the beginning of the game. You take the top card from the event deck and you flip it over. For example, one of the starting event deck cards is called Dark Knight. During this turn, one time only, during one detection test, you can ignore and reroll all of the detection dice that have rolled either a scene icon or scene if the alarm is going off icon. So if there's no alarm going on right now, but you roll an eyeball on your dice, that means the guard saw you and it sets the alarm off right away. Whereas if the alarm is already set off and you roll either the eyeball or the eyeball with the alarm bell icon on it, that means that they have a 2 out of 3 chance, a 2/3 chance of actually seeing you, whereas normally you would they would only have a 1/3 chance of seeing you.
I see.
So after you've drawn your event card, you begin your turn with 3 actions on your board. So you know that you only have 3 actions, which could be you're moving from 1 square, 2 square, 3 square, or you're moving 1 square, killing an enemy, looting the body. That's 3 actions. You know, move 1, kill 2, loot 3. And that's all handled during the assassin's phase. So you have those 3 cubes between, or you each have 3 cubes, and it's all 4 players, if you have 4 players, all 3 players, all 2 players, or just you solo with your 2 assassins. You can choose how you want to use them. You can choose the order of how you want to use them. So if we were all playing a level right now and I said, okay, I'm going to take this enemy on the left, so I'm going to move 2 spaces, and then I say, but I'm going to save my last action to use on a future turn, I could do that, and that's a very simple, okay, I'm moving point A to point B, but let's say we have something where we have a boss that we have to fight. So it's like, okay, the 3 of us should move in, you know, so that's each of us taking an action, and then we're each going to decide how do we want to attack. I'm going to use my sword, James is going to use his ranged weapon, and let's say Declan uses some kind of trap like a Caltron bomb to set off an explosion after the enemy moves or something like that. And so we figure out how we want to do things, but until you've started the enemy phase, which is the next phase, you really have the freedom of really figuring out, do I want to do this or do I want to try something else? I like to say, and I said this with my friend who I had started playing a co-op game with, I feel like I'm creating save states before each turn. It's like, okay, cool. So this is where the map is currently. If I do this and I roll these dice, is that going to work? No, that's not going to work because then I find out that I don't have a certain piece of equipment. So let's revert that and refresh the save and go back to how I was before and think of a different option. So I may play out a turn a couple times to kind of figure out what's the best step for me to do. But you're not hindered from doing that. So there's nothing to say unless you have somebody who's strictly playing with you saying, oh, you said that you're going to move there, you have to move there, you don't have an option, you know. You have that freedom of determining how do you actually want to do this level before you agree to that specific aspect and continue on to the next phase, which again is the enemy phase. The enemies, which you don't know what's going to happen with them, have three steps that they do. First, you draw a reinforcement card, which is based off of the number of assassins in play, 2, 3, or 4. And it will tell you, you know, for this enforcement card, if the alarm is off, add 1 crossbowman or ranged enemy to entry A, and add 2 crossbowmen to entry B. Or if the alarm is on, add 3 crossbowmen to entry A, add 2 heavy guards to entry B, add a crossbowman to entrance C, and add a heavy guard to entrance D, you know, so you have a lot more enemies to deal with. And on the event card, if you look at the images that I have on my playthrough, or any of the sites that you may find online, there is a compass mark on the card, and it will be anything from the 4 directions, northeast, south, and west, or a question mark, and that determines which way do the enemies move at the end of their turn during the movement step. So if it says that they're going to move north, each enemy that can move without being restricted by a wall, being stopped by an assassin on their space that they've already seen, or coming across something like a body or a last location, which is indicated with the little red icons, much like the game when, we'll use Ezio for an example, when Ezio would jump into a haystack, he's still being looked for by the guards, so they know that, oh, he was in this area, so they're still going to look in that area and not continue further on, even though he may have continued to run down the road. And once they've moved, then they will enter their combat step, and each guard has a fixed amount of health, usually 1, 2, 3, possibly 4 health for some of the heavier hitters. And then they have a number of attack die that they use. And those dies have two icons on them, a hit icon, which is a little star, or a shield icon, which is a defend. So if you have three crossbowmen that are surrounding you, and you roll the three die for them, because they each roll one attack die, which are indicated with the black dice. The normal dice for the assassins are white, with a like a gold trim. let's say you roll their attack die and you get two hits in the defend. Well, then that means one of them missed you, but the other two hit. And depending on how many assassins are on that space, or even allies, because there are things like escort missions in the game, you determine where does that damage fall. Do I give it to my heavy hitter, Alessandra, who has a beefy armor set and a shield and, you know, has healing skills? Or do I give it to somebody like my Hidden Blade assassin, Claudio, who has more skills based around assassinations, you know, and determine how do I want to lay that damage? So you can really plan out who takes this damage, who gets attacked, how do you move, things like that. And then that turn ends and you draw the next event card and start turn two. And then, like I was saying, there are certain levels where you have additional things to keep in mind, like special event cards, or characters that you may have to assist further, or additional objectives that may pop up when you synchronize with your tower, which is one of the funnest things and one of the nicest things I like about it compared to the game. You climb on top of your tower, which does not come with the game. It's an item that can be purchased separately. I currently have the one called the Crow's Nest, and the other one called the Clock Tower was exclusive to the Kickstarter, but the Crow's Nest can be purchased separately. So putting your little figurine on top of that tower, which stands, I don't know, maybe 1/3 of a meter, I don't know. It's a good, like, I don't know centimeters well, so I'm going to say like an 8-inch tower, which is about a...
It's about 20 centimeters, something.
Yeah, like 20 centimeters, something like that.
Yeah.
And it's overlooking this map of the Venice streets. You know, it looks really cool to have your little assassin up there, and below it has a little haystack. Well, on the actual game board, it has a tower, but it's 2D. It's all flat and kind of like tilted, so it's like, oh, okay, that's obviously a tower, and that's a little haystack. So I would just pretend that I'm doing it, but it's much cooler having these like 3D figures that show that, you know, the height of the tower and stuff. But you flip over your tower card and it says, oh, there's a chest over there in the far left corner of the map, or, oh, there's the enemy boss over there, we have to go find him, or, hey, there's an objective here, go complete that. So it's like Ezio sinking, or Altair sinking, or Edward sinking, or any of the assassins syncing with their points on the map and unlocking all of the different mysteries and you know, enemy locations and all this awesome Eagle Vision type things. So you really do get kind of pulled into the game that way. And I know I've rambled a bit here. I'm trying to remember the full question. What was the full question again?
No, it's fine. I mean, it's great to listen to. I was asking about like the balance between, I suppose, your own control over building
right,
your
versus the game. Yeah, so
versus a bit of the randomness that the game throws in with dice and whatever.
So your randomness is going to come from your dice rolls, the decks, which get shuffled at the beginning of every mission set. So they'll be like, take your discard pile, put it in with the rest of the deck, shuffle it up again. So if you've read through my playthrough, you may notice that I get a lot of the same event cards again and again. Like each mission, I may start with a Dark Knight, or I may start with this. And that just comes down to, I guess, either me not shuffling well enough, or me not realizing that the top card is always staying on the top and I'm not cutting the deck well enough. But I would notice a lot that I feel like I'm playing with the same events, and I haven't said this event or this event in a while. And they may be really cool events. They may also be events that I hate and I don't want to see come up. So that's a good thing. But sometimes it may, you may find that it gets that control that you don't have from the game determining what happens could become a little repetitive. But then, of course, you learn your limitations. Sorry, I stood up there. You may have lost me for a second.
No, it's okay.
You learn your limitations of what you can and can't do as an assassin in the game. So it's not like I can, much like I could in Valhalla, I could hit a enemy from hundreds of meters away with my bow. But in the board game, I can only hit somebody with a ranged weapon that is on a square that is touching my current square that is in a non-diagonal path. So it's only north, you know, south, east, or west of me,
gotcha.
But not like northeast gotcha. Or southeast or whatever. And no more than one square away without something like a wall blocking me. And then other cases that where you don't get control of certain things. Canals, for instance, because there are canals where in Venice, you cannot use your ranged weapons in the canal because you're in water. You can't pull a bow and arrow and,
makes sense.
You know, and, yeah. and stuff like that. Which I actually even tried recently on Valhalla because I was messing around with the with locations and tried to pull my bow out for something and I couldn't do it. And I was like, okay, well, there you go. At least if I'm remembering right. So there is a randomness to the game, but you do get your time. There's no like time limit. Like you have 3 minutes to complete.
Thank your turn. You. That was one there. Of my other questions was if, because I'm looking through your thread and you've put a huge amount of work into photographing each move, then annotating the photograph to say, we moved here, we killed these guys. It's incredible the work you put in. Right. And then I was thinking, and again, I'm not a board game, not especially not to this level of complexity. Yes, casual gaming with the family and whatever. Mm. But I wasn't sure if there was going to be like a timer, like, you know, okay, turn the card. You have 3 minutes to
right.
decide your plan, roll the dice, you know, make the move. But if there's no time limit, that's my kind of game. I like to yeah. sit there and think and, you know, plan it
the
out.
The only form of time limit that they do have in the game is it's rule 47 in the book. When a memory must be completed in a limited number of turns, you create an event deck with a number of cards equal to the specified number of turns. So, for example, in the Creed versus Crow multiplayer expansion, each game or level is only 5 turns long. So much like a time limit that you would have on a map in the multiplayer okay. on the game.
Yeah.
So once that 5th card has been flipped over and completed, that's it. The game's over. In the mission styles, so if you have, like, you have to get this escorted assassin from point A to point B within 3 turns, if you don't do it by turn 3, then you failed the mission and you have to start over. Or you may have just failed the objection or the optional objection and the ending may change. There's actually one specific campaign where I guess we should probably say at this point, are we talking spoilers here or no?
I think we can talk spoilers. Okay. What do you think, Declan? People can stop listening and come back another time or whatever. But I think we can. What do you reckon?
The only spoilers I would like to avoid, and I'll get on to that in a minute, is the Tokyo DLC, because I do that's have some fine, questions. Fine. But that's the only one I'd say avoid spoilers okay. on as best as possible. But
yeah.
there's a reason yeah. for that I'll explain in a minute.
Sure, I want to come to that later, Declan. I made a note of that. So yeah, that'll be interesting. We'll come back to that.
Okay, so as an example, in Sequence 4, towards the later half of the game, in the first mission, Defense by the Book, you are trying to prevent the guards on the map from, you're trying to prevent the guards from entering the assassin headquarters and taking the Staff of Eden, because they're still okay. going after the Venetian staff, or the Italy staff. you know, the one that Ezio had from Rome.
Mm, yes.
So you're trying to protect the Staff, and even if you have successfully kept the Staff of Eden, it gives you a little sequence of, you know, oh great, you know, we protected it, move on to memory 4.2. If the guards take the Staff of Eden, then you have to play an additional memory called 4.1A, where you actually have to reach out to Lucrezia and ask for her help to find it. Because her brother's dead now.
Okay.
And the only person that would know information about the Templars is going to be his sister Lucrezia. So that's an example where the story can branch off, but normally only if you have failed something.
Right. That's fast. I mean, the work that must have gone into planning this.
No, it's ridiculous, because not only is it just planning the story, but planning how they use the stuff in the box. So you have three trays when you open the box. Or for me, now that I've like broken everything apart and stuff, I open up my box and I have all of my map pieces and my rule books and my sticker sheets for the objectives stacked on top under or in between the styrofoam that's holding up the box so that it doesn't collapse on itself. So I move all of that out. Then I have my first tray, which has enemies, map accessories like ladders, the assassins themselves, characters for the headquarters, allies like mercenaries and thieves and courtesans. And underneath that tray, you have more enemies, the additional crossbowmen, the agile enemy, which is the agile soldiers, the ones that had kind of the more pointed helmet that were the faster runners.
Yes, and would like climb those. On
rooftops and stuff. Yep. And, you know, going back to the limitations of the game, certain enemies can't do certain things. Crossbowmen, for example, can't climb onto a rooftop unless there's a ladder nearby, but the agile guards can chase you and they will climb up on those rooftops. And then you have other things like the horsemen. There are horse guards like you would find outside the Colosseum in Rome in the video game. And then you have your fast travel stations, your rooftop gazebos that you would hide into. They had like the covered cloth covered sides, so they couldn't see you and they wouldn't even like look into it unless they saw you jump into it. And then you have some of the bigger pieces like Leonardo's tank and Leonardo's naval gunship or gunboat. And then underneath that, you have all of the story components of the game. You've got your envelopes on one side for each individual levels. You've got little catch trays to put all of the little things like the objectives, the objective tokens, the notification tokens, the reminder tokens, the entry points for the enemies, stuff like that. And then you have a collection of boxes that are in black boxes with icons on them that are warnings to not open them, because these are the spoilers for the game. And they're numbered, so you know which one to open, you know, based off of when the level setup tells you to, or when you flip a card, it says, pull out box number one and take the miniature from, you know, inside and put it here. And then you may see that card tells you a little bit about that miniature, whether it be, this is a boss battle, or this is a special character, or this is a big event or something like that. And underneath those boxes, you'll have your dice and your health counters and stuff like that. So it's very organized. Just the detail of that, because every level uses the enemy types. You have all 30 of the crossbowmen. You have all 10 of the heavy guards, which will change based off of where you are in the game. You have your map pieces. And then you may find that down the line, oh, I'm not using the agile guards anymore. I haven't used them for five levels, but they're like, hey, a messenger is here. Pull an agile guard out and put him on the board to make it look like, you know, you have to go chase that guy like you would in the games. So the even just the planning of calling back to, when are you going to use this? When are you not going to use this? Are you even going to use it? Like Lucrezia, I never used, but she's in my box, you know? So even that, it's just so intricate and so well put together. Declan.
Oh, don't mind me. I'm just wishing I had this game during my isolation period of COVID, because I would have probably loved this. Listen to you describe the intricacies, and I think this game seems kind of phenomenal, but you've mentioned a couple of times restrictions. And now, one of the biggest jokes I have about the franchise 15 years is the whole debate of gameplay versus realism, because, you know, you can't have a game too realistic. But right. It seems like this board game with their limitations, you know, guards can't get up without a ladder, can't attack unless the squares are touching. Does them limitations offer a little bit more realism that you might not get in a video game, because a video game's got to be a bit more fluid, if that makes sense?
I would say that it's more obvious, the realism, because when you're playing games like Assassin's Creed 2 and you're running on the rooftops, you know, you take off in the middle of a shop and the guards have to run to the ladder. Well, you're not going to sit there and pay attention to, are they going to just climb up after me, or are they going to go find a ladder, unless you're actually like looking at the game. Here, you're told up front so that you can play correctly that the guards can't just jump on the rooftop from the ground. You know, that's not physically possible. They have to have a ladder. If there's no ladder, they can't climb. Yet this specific guard, the agile guard, you know, because they are agile, and they don't say that specifically because they are agile, but just knowing what the word agile means, you know, it's somebody who is swifter, you know, so they're going to be able to move freely. And if you have played the video game before, which I would be very curious how this game would play for somebody who's never played Assassin's Creed before but likes tabletop games, I think it would still be a great game for any tabletop game enthusiast, but you may not necessarily recognize all of the callbacks or all of the references. But then if you were to have them play this and then go play Assassin's Creed 2 or Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, how many oh, I remember that enemy from the board game. Oh, yeah, they have to use a ladder, you know. That makes more sense, you know. So it's more obvious, but nothing stood out to me to be like, that can't happen, you know. I would see things where I would be more kind of annoyed. Whereas an example, on canal squares, assassins have to be in the water, which means that they can't use their ranged weapons, but the guards themselves will be on any of the surfaces, whether it be a walkway or a boat or a dock, but you had to be in the water the entire time, because normally that's how it would be in the game. You wouldn't hide from a guard on the dock, you would jump into the water right by the dock and then grab him out and pull him into the water. so, you know, there are times where it's like, oh, I really want to use my crossbow because I need to save my other assassin, but I can't because I'm in the water and I don't have any more. If I use my last action to move from this space, well, then I can't attack. So, you know, there are times where you may, you know, get into a puzzle and be like, okay, well, they're going to have to take a hit and I'm going to have to, you know, help them out on the next turn or get them to run. And that's another aspect that I haven't covered yet is the hunt. So much like in the game, if you decide to start combat with a guard or you accidentally start combat and then you choose to leave from them, they're going to chase you. In this game, that still happens. So if you get seen by a guard but you don't have a weapon or you don't have the means to defeat them and you run, the game determines the chase or the hunt, as they call it, by how many guards you have in play. So, as an example, if you're on a space and you've been seen by three guards and you run away to the next space, what it does is it takes half of the guards, and you can't have more than four guards on a space just due to limitations and, I guess, you know, not having 30 guards on one square, because that would just be ridiculous. But it takes half of the current guards. So if you have three guards, that would be 1.5 guards rounded up. So normally you would have anywhere between one to two guards at most would chase after you onto the next square. And then if you chose to fight them, you would only face those two guards. If you continued to still run, it would take half of those two guards being one guard, and that guard would chase you. So you're now spreading out the guards on the path that you're taking, but half of one guard is, you know, half a guard rounded up is one guard. So that one guard will continue to chase you until you either go somewhere that they can't, like on a rooftop for a crossbowman that doesn't have a ladder, or you kill them. So there are various aspects and game mechanics from the game that are identifiable in here. And I can't think of anything specific that isn't present outside of like major, you know, plot points from the game or items that you would only see in, you know, in one specific game that you wouldn't see in others. And because this is based in Venice, in Rome, a lot of the mechanics that you're going to see are going to be from Ezio's saga. So, you know, axe throwing wasn't something that Ezio had, not that I remember. So you're not going to have like Eivor's axe throw. You know, you're going to use a crossbow. You're going to use a regular bow and arrow. You're going to use a throwing knife. You're going to use a flintlock pistol. Or maybe not a flintlock pistol. I can't remember exactly what the pistols are, but there's a few different weapons that you can get based off of the era. So you're not going to have things that, oh, you know, like everybody says with the original game, they didn't have crossbows, you know. You know, everything in here fits into the game or into the period, as far as I can tell.
So one thing I have been wondering, because you can technically get away with it in games, and I know tabletop RPGs are completely different, there is rules to follow. If you wanted, could you have that creativity to create your own scenarios or just make your own playthroughs?
Yeah, and I was just thinking about that yesterday after I had finished the last of the expansions. Though I'll say I haven't played the multiplayer yet, but I have gone through the rule book, so I understand how it works. But I plan on playing that with a buddy towards the end of the month. But yeah, I would think that there should be something that that Triton Noir and the Creed Venice team could put out on how to design your own levels. I would love to see a user created map, similar to how we had in Odyssey, where people can make their own levels.
Yeah, you have story all creator of these, mode. Yeah,
yeah. You've got all of these. You've got all of these modes. You've got all of these different events. You've got these different tower cards. You could have it to where it works with what you want. Each card specifically tells you exactly what chapter or mission it came from and what numerical order, because all of the cards are in a certain order. That way, when you open up the pack and it pulls out the red card, it says, take the four event cards and lay them down on the deck or shuffle them in. Take the four equipment cards and shuffle those into that deck. You know exactly where they go and what order they go. That way you're not, oh, take the four card, oh, okay, let me say, that's an event, that's an enemy, that's an event, there's an equipment, you know. You're not shuffling, you're putting them back as they came out of box. So you could easily say, okay, I want to take all of these event cards from these chapters, these equipment cards, and then I'm going to build this map, and then I'm going to write my own story. You could easily do that. Just nobody that I'm aware of has done so yet. But I would say somebody who really enjoyed this game and is really invested into it could definitely do that. And I would think that maybe down the line I would even do that from time to time. Or if you had a, if you had, say, an RPG group, you could easily determine your own little scenarios, like, oh, hey, the Templars have gotten hold of Lucrezia Borgia, and they're going to kill her because they won't tell her this. We have to go save her. You know, that's not something that happens in this game specifically. But I think that was kind of one of the side stories from one of the Brotherhood stories, where you had to save, you know, Lucrezia from her guards or something like that. When you were getting Da Vinci's patents, I can't remember specifically, but you could easily write your own stuff and then, you know, just document. I mean, you can look at the rule book and say, okay, I can exactly follow this, and this is how they laid out this mission, so that's how I'll lay out my mission, so I can give it to somebody else and they can recreate it and play it themselves. So yeah, I mean, that's definitely something you could do. You're not given any information on how to do it, but you know, if you can play this game, you can create your own level. You just may have to figure out whether or not you're good at telling a story, or maybe you just want to redo a scenario, but you want to have it to where everybody only has, say, throwing knives, and you have no swords or something like that, and you know, and make up your own rules. It just wouldn't be canonical at that point. There was something I wanted to talk about in that thought, but I lost it. I'll try to remember. But yeah, you could easily create your own levels. You would just have to document them, and that's what it was. You would just have to document them. One of the uniquenesses to the game and the replayability for it is you have two different difficulty levels. You have the normal level where you just play the game as is, and then you have an easier mode. Let me find it. Is it on this one? Let me take a look.
While you're looking for that, I do want to say quickly, I'm just visualizing now that if I had this game, I would go to the charity shop, I would buy figurines like Power Rangers or Lord of the Rings, and use them as stand-ins, and just call them Animus Hacks.
What would be cool is...
Animus Hacked mode.
They had... the series Hit Clicks had... excuse me, figurines from the Assassin's Creed series that could easily be replaceable in these, and they're already painted and stuff, because everything in this box is not painted, though you can paint them, and people do paint them. I just don't know how to paint that well, and I don't want to ruin them and make a poor paint job. But anyways, there's an easier mode where if you are having too much problems, or you want to play with somebody, let's say if you wanted to play with one of the kids, you can have it to where you play an easier difficulty, and I believe the rule is about the crossbowmen specifically, to where they don't attack or they don't detect you, like at all, something like that. I can't remember specifically, but it makes it easier to where you don't have to worry about one type of enemy as much. And then later on, one of the other spoilers, when you finish the campaign or one of the expansions, you unlock the legendary difficulty, which gives you a new set of the enemy cards in black where they have more health and do more damage. But what makes the uniqueness to the replayability is that each assassin has four levels total that they reach. And they each have their own skills. So for an example, Alessandra, who is the tank of the group, she's a fantastic character, and I love her character story. She has a ability to where she can re-roll her attack dice once per turn, or as she levels up, she can change the attack dice to the side of her choosing, so that she can activate her assassin abilities on her weapons and really, do some damage. But then they each have four skill slots that you can go and pull a skill card for each level or each rank. In the main game, the core game, each rank has four different skills that you can determine. So you could have it to where Alessandra has the ability of using bandages and healing herself once per memory for an extra 3 health, or to heal 3 health instead of having to have a health potion. Or she has the ability of ignoring a detection die or something like that. And so you can build your character, and then if you find that, oh, you know what, I loved playing that character, I want to play them again, but I don't want that skill, I'm going to use this other skill. And you can determine, which skill do you want and change for that. And in the expansions, because you start off at level 2, you may only be limited to choosing one or two skill cards based off of what's provided in the box. That really is more towards the Tokyo expansion, where you're given specifically, this is your skill card for skill one, this is your skill card for skill two, but three and four, you get to choose which ones you want, because it starts you at two right away to show that you're an established assassin. So that randomness and replayability gives you the ability of determining, how do I build my assassin? And then the next time you play, you may say, okay, cool, I'm going to do that same assassin, and I'm just going to change her up a little bit.
So did you get, did you replay the game? Did you get satisfaction from, because I guess you know the story by then, but did you get satisfaction from taking different approaches, different character builds and so on? Actually, let me step back one. Do you always get the same ending, or is it open?
Yes, yeah, there are no multiple endings. The game is linear in its story, and it gives you a canonical story. So everything that happens in this board game is canonical to the Assassin's Creed universe. So it does fill in some gaps or give you some information that you may not have necessarily thought about. But to answer your question, I have not replayed the game in full, but I have replayed certain levels multiple times. As I said earlier in this podcast, I had to restart the game because I did not read the rule book thoroughly enough. And when I had originally started, I only had one character in front of me. When I got to, I think, the third or fourth mission, it introduces the the enemies and their reinforcements. And it says to pull from the reinforcement deck. Well, on the enemy board, because there's an enemy board where you put what is your current ranged enemy, what is your current heavy enemy, what is the alarm status, and the enemy reinforcement deck. On the board itself, there is a single assassin icon printed on it, whereas on the event decks, or not the event decks, the reinforcement decks, there is a two assassin icon, three assassin icon, and four assassin icon to indicate how many assassins are playing, because if you have four assassins and only three enemies enter the map, that's not challenging. Four assassins would get like six enemies per turn. And if you run out of enemies, you also fail the mission, because if you can't put more enemies on the map, that means that there's too many enemies on the map and you're overrun, because you're not going to get out of here. You know, so that's another example of being, you know, overwhelmed. Well, I was playing the level and it says on the optional objective, run away from one or more guards by moving to a rooftop. Because crossbowmen can't reach the rooftop. And I go, well, there's no enemies on the board, because at this mission, you don't start with enemies. And I'm like, how do I get enemies? And then I went back and read that you have to play with at least two assassins, because then you'll have the two assassin enemy reinforcement deck. And I'm already four missions in. I'm like, I have to start the entire game over, because what did so far doesn't actually mean anything, you know? So I had to restart. And I think there was another time where I had to restart because, what was it? I had to restart because I wasn't using, I think I wasn't using one of the dice correctly, or I wasn't using, I think it was the enemy movement, the enemy phase, something like that. I wasn't doing something correctly to where I should have been killed in a previous mission or something like that. So I'm like, I'm going to start over. I now understand better and better each time I play how to play. And then, of course, I also have that side campaign that I'm doing with a friend in the co-op, and we're still in the very first sequence. So I think we're on like maybe mission three, maybe mission four. So I now have this huge amount of information to where I'm going to be able to understand exactly what needs to do. I know what's going to happen, but I'm not going to tell them because I don't want to ruin it for them. But yeah, replaying this game would be great. The other reason I haven't replayed is that the time it takes to play is very requiring. They note on the box that it can take anywhere from 30 to 60 minutes to play a level, but because I was documenting everything, a single mission would take me one plus hours to finish because I'm taking photos, I'm editing the photos with the little, you know, football John Madden, you know, like lines and stuff saying, oh, here in the yellow is this character and they're moving that way, or I'm doing this, that, and the other. And as you see through my documented playthrough, I stopped doing that mainly because my phone updated and took away that ability, which was weird, but it also saved me time because then I'm just taking photos and talking about it. And then in the last expansion, the Tokyo one, I didn't want to spend an extra hour uploading everything to Twitter and saying, exact photo A did this, photo B did this, photo A, photo B, photo B, you know. And it's like, I've got 30 images that I have to upload for one level, but I'm usually uploading one or two levels at a time. And then I have issues with Twitter where it would have an issue and not post, and that entire 30 tweet thread would get deleted because it couldn't post the first one. So I'm like, okay, I'm just going to take the level photos. If you followed me this far, you should understand how these levels work, and you should be, okay, that's the event card. Let me zoom in and see what it says. Okay, cool. And I just did a story synopsis, like, you know, Assassin A and Assassin B have to go and save this person. So they bolt in there, they sneak past a couple guards, they grab the person, they get out, you know, and it kind of reads a little bit better. And I kind of enjoyed the way it read. And I know from one specific person that I follow who is a big fan of a certain somebody, they very much enjoyed reading that last expansion. And I think that was a great way to where you're not sitting there yourself and scrolling through 30 different slides and then you accidentally tap the top of your phone and it goes back to the top of the list and you have to go and figure out where you are because they all look the same. It made it easier for me to document and for others to read. So replayability is definitely a great boon to this because I put $500 into this board game because the core game is $250 and then each expansion was about 70 or 80 US. And then on top of that, I bought the Crow's Nest Tower, which was like 60. And I bought the special colored dice that are color coordinated to the specific assassins, which was like an extra, I don't know, like 20. And then I also bought card protectors for some of the decks, realizing I didn't buy anywhere near enough. So I don't even use those. They're still in the original packaging. So I spent, you know, in total like 500 plus US before shipping to get this game. But, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to document everything, is because not everybody's going to be able to afford that kind of investment into this, or even have the time to play it. Because if it takes me an hour and a half to play a level, and the reason it took me so long, I think I started in like November and I finished the main game just a month or two ago. So it took me like 6 months to finish this thing. Or 4 months or something like that. But it was also, you know, thinking to myself, I have to go and set up the map. I have to pull the figurines out. I have to do this. And then I have to take photos. There's a lot of work invested for myself. So it was something where you can pick up and play, you know, play a level every night, but you're going to spend time setting up the level. It's not just picking up the controller, turning on the game, jumping into Venice and being like, cool, I'm going to knock out like three or four levels and then go to sleep, you know. No, you're going to spend a little bit of time setting this thing up and playing it, so you have to make sure you have the time to play it. Much like you guys have to schedule your podcast, you would have to schedule, when am I going to play this game? So it would be great for a group to get together, say, once a week and play out a level, and then just play it over the course of a year. That would be great. I think that's a good benefit for the game. But for solo play, or even just, you know, a quick play, you're going to be investing, you know, days at a time. I think, you know, just the last expansion is 8 levels. I broke it up into 2 days, and that took me, now that I knew how to play and everything, I think I spent maybe 4 to 6 hours each day playing the game and taking my photos and stuff like that. So it's an investment both financially and time-wise. But what is nice is that there is a retail edition that is going to be released at a cheaper price. We don't know what that's going to be because it's not going to have the minifigures. It's going to be replaced with cardboard pieces, much like how Orlog got a retail edition outside of its deluxe edition that they sold on the Pure Arts website. James?
I wanted to ask, this will be the most, perhaps the most boring dad question, but it's kind of connected to what you said about setup. So you mentioned in your article, and it did make me giggle, you described the size of the table. I don't know if it's your dining room table or whatever that you're setting this up on. Could you just give us an idea, how much space do you need and how long does it take to unbox this thing and say, right, I'm sitting down this evening to play a memory sequence.
Right.
What kind of space do you need and how much time do you need to actually get this thing set up so it's ready to go?
So for most of the levels, and I think I put it in my article. Let me pull it up real quick. Most of the levels, you have your characters usually right in front of you. You have your characters right in front of you. You have your headquarters for the assassins, which sometimes I would have to put that off on another table or on one of the shelves behind me, or I would just set it carefully in the box. Because what's nice about the packaging for the box is that each tray has a protective lid on it that's transparent so you can see through it. And then on top of that, at least for the top two trays that have the character figurines, it actually has an image to show you exactly where each character goes. So you know this character goes here, these enemies go here, so you're not trying to force a crossbowman into the space of a regular assassin.
It's a serious investment of time, but
it's a serious investment of time.
You clearly enjoyed it because you carried on and you went all the way through to the end. And you, as you said, you restarted a couple of times and you've played the expansions.
Table, what was it, IKEA circular table? It's not a Brynwood. What is it? Let me pull it up.
Go on, Declan.
So. It's the last question I've got on my nice little sheet. While you look for the table, and is the biggest one. This game is created by Creed Venice, and did you say Titan Noir Comics?
Yeah, Triton Noir. That's Triton the company Noir. That made it. The Creed Venice team is just a team that handles this specific game, but Triton Noir is the publishing company.
So. That would make, even though this is, you know, like, it's a canon, but technically the only one that Ubisoft has invested in would that is realistically pseudo-canon to Fontenay is the Tokyo expansion. So how does that really play going from Venice in the past to suddenly a modern-day Layla mission that is never actually mentioned in the games when it technically should be?
Right. So the game was written alongside of the Ubisoft team. So it does have its credibility to it. Why can't I find this table?
In your article, I was quickly scrolling through your article. You say that your table is 1 meter in diameter, and as you can see from the pictures, it pretty much fills it with the map tiles, all the different character cards, the dice. It's you need some space to
set in this certain thing up. Levels, you have two maps. You have map A and map B, which will have different objectives or objectives where it's like somebody starts here, somebody starts here. And kind of transitioning into Declan's question. So the story for Brotherhood of Venice is you are establishing the Brotherhood with Ezio. So at this point, we are at the end of Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, where Ezio is about to take out Cesare. And that happens in the first two missions, or three missions, something like that, in the tutorial. And then after that, you are now starting to build the Brotherhood Bureau in Venice. So story-wise, and I guess this is, again, for somebody who doesn't want to spoil the story, I would, you know, pause here and come back later on. the assassins are informed of an abandoned Templar headquarters that they plan on taking. And they take it and they turn it into their bureau. You get to choose whether it's a bureau that's going to be housed by courtesans or a bureau housed by mercenaries. And from there, you are trying to figure out where is the Staff of Eden so that you can get it back to Ezio and stop the Templars from taking over. And throughout the story, you are doing everything from protecting your headquarters from the Templars, trying to invade the actual headquarters. You are working with Leonardo da Vinci because he is still tasked at this point to build war machines for the Templars, and you have to save him. At one point, in one of the most annoying characters to deal with, you have to save, what was his name? Salai, his apprentice.
Well, I've never heard. You have to save him. Is that Ezio's apprentice? Is it?
No. Leonardo's apprentice.
Oh, yes.
Little devil, gotcha. Whatever his name was.
Yeah.
I think it's Salai. You have to save him from the Templars because he's the only one that knows where Leonardo is. And they're trying to find him so they can figure out where Leonardo's hiding or something like that. And his character card during your movement, at the end of the turn, he will move off randomly in one direction. So you have to keep grabbing him and pulling him back to the exit. because he just moves randomly. And that's kind of, unless an assassin is with him. If somebody is with him, then that escort mission is easier and he just follows them. But if you're not with him, he will take off in a random direction. And you have to still go get him before the Templars find him, because if his health goes to zero, then you fail. And then you have protecting Leonardo and later on protecting Machiavelli or finding Machiavelli. And what's nice, though, and what builds up the Brotherhood, much like it does in the game, is you end up recruiting Leonardo and Machiavelli to your Brotherhood, and then you're able to unlock more capabilities of the Brotherhood, or at least use them better. So in your Brotherhood, you have your main hallway, which is where you store your stored equipment. So think of it as your assassin's war chest. You have a infirmary where you can have courtesans or a doctor, which you can unlock later on. One of the doctores from the game. Or any of the assassin apprentices or even Ezio himself or whoever can be in there and they can heal your assassins based off of the current level of your headquarters, level 1, level 2, so on and so forth. Or they can fully revive or give more health to somebody who was incapacitated in a previous mission that was replaced with an apprentice. So you have your infirmary. You have a kind of shop where you can have your allies. You draw 4 random equipment cards, and based off of how many allies you have in the room and what their skills are, you can end up keeping 1 plus of those cards and build up your armory. So it's like, oh cool, I got some poison, or oh cool, I got an extra throwing knife, or oh cool, I got more parachutes, or the ability of calling a town crier to turn off the alarm, you know, various different consumable items. Then you have your blueprint room, where Leonardo does his best. You have blueprints that you unlock after certain levels as a reward, because every level gives you a reward at the end that you don't know what it is, and it's usually something pretty good. And for an example, after 1 level, you unlock the blueprints for the poison blades. And the poison blades, much like they do in the game, allows you to, if incognito, attack a guard and poison them, and then before they die, you have them roll one of their attack die, and they can deal damage to a crossbowman nearby. So you could end up stabbing a heavy guard, taking him out, and he has like 2 or 3 health, but then as he's going down, he ends up taking out a crossbowman, and there's 2 less enemies to worry about. And then there's other items that you'll be able to uncover, everything from items for your assassins, items for the war tank. And there's some really good items in there. And the stronger the item gets, the stronger the assassin skill for that item gets, which on the attack die that you have a... I'm trying to remember the dice now. Why did I forget what the dice look like? Let me look up the dice. You have a six-sided die. It has a hit on it, which is just a little star, like the enemies. It has a retaliation, which is two crossed blades, which is you missed, but the enemy attacks you and potentially does damage. And then you have the assassin roll, which is the assassin emblem, and it will unlock an extra special ability for your equipment. As an example, let me get to the equipment. For the common sword, it is a melee weapon that if you use it, it will set off the alarm because it makes noise, obviously. You attack a guard, you're going to, you know, make noise. You're going to hear them scream. It's not like the hidden blade where it's quiet. It costs one action to use, and it can do up to two potential damage because you roll two attack die. But if you happen to roll the assassin side on one of those dice, which still counts as one hit or one damage, what it says is that one guard on the targeted square moves back to a nearby square of your choice. So let's say you're fighting three guards and you roll those two dice and you get hits on both of them, one of the hits being the assassin roll, you can force that third guard to move to another square because they're, you know, they're stepping back, you know, so now they're not a problem anymore and you can run away, as an example. And as you go on and on, you'll find that some of those swords allow you to reroll all of your dice and add on the amount of damage, or you automatically get an amount of damage based off of your brotherhood level. You know, all of these cool little aspects, and even for ones like the throwing knives, which are a item that you get to keep, but they're a consumable. If you use the throwing knife and you get the assassin roll, the throwing knife normally does one damage, which would take out a crossbowman easily, but it's not going to take out an agile guard or a heavy guard or anything like that because they have 2-3 damage. If you roll the assassin die, it will take out a heavy guard, but you lose your throwing knife in the process. You get to discard it by putting it back into the equipment deck on the game board, and you can potentially claim it again. But you know, that's kind of a good and the bad. It's like, great, I killed that enemy, but now I don't have a range weapon anymore. And I had that happen to me a couple times in the early games. Down the line, when you get your bow or a crossbow or something like that, you don't have to worry about losing the item unless you were to discard it for a different one.
So it really does, despite your best planning, stuff can change, and you really do have to adapt. Oh, yeah,
it can change
move by move or roll by roll of the dice. That's fantastic.
Yeah, it can change on the, you know, the turn of a dime, but you have a... I've never had times where I'm like, I don't know what to do. I usually just have to figure out, like, okay,
yeah,
I know what my objective is. I've had to give up some optional objectives, especially like in the latest expansion, the Tokyo one. I had to skip out on some objectives. And even at the end of the Roma one, I realized, I'm like, you know, I'm almost done with the game. That extra experience isn't going to do anything for me. And while it gives you a little bit of a note, like, what is that optional objective? Like, as an example, in the... let me find one of them. In one of the levels, it may say that, you know, optional objective, you can get extra information about the Templar Order by grabbing these missives from them here and here. but if you do that, or you don't do that, you know, the game ends. You don't get extra experience, but you don't also, like, miss out on lore. It's not going to say, oh yeah, this missive said something about this, that, and the other. And this one said that something's going to go on over here. It doesn't actually give you any additional story. It's just, this is a way for you to build up your experience. And the faster you build up your experience, the faster you level up. And when you get to those higher levels, these assassins are so overpowered. It's like putting Master Ezio in the very first missions of Assassin's Creed 2.
Awesome. I've got one very quick story question. It pops in, popped up when I was scrolling through your thread today. And again, we've already given people a spoiler warning, so let's carry on.
Yeah, I should get back to that too when we finish with your question, because I know I diverted from the actual story, but go ahead. What was your question?
It's fine. One of the characters is either using or retrieving the spear of Leonidas.
Yes, it was so good.
How the heck does that get from wherever Herodotus had it in Greece at the end of the crossover story, which I get, to be fair, the crossover story was added after the board game was released. But how does it get from there to Venice?
My favorite character from the main game is Alessandra. She is...
Just want to say, her feminine version of the Ezio robes on her artwork is just perfect. Oh, yeah. Anyway, sorry,
and
mate, carry on.
She is a freaking tank. I loved her. So there are four optional memories which give you the backstory to these assassins. Okay. Unfortunately, they do not do that in the Roma expansion, which gives you four new assassins to play. But they want to tell you who these characters are. So her mission is called She Spears, She Scores. And it says, Alessandra was summoned by the Brotherhood. She learns that a powerful artifact, which is said to date back to ancient times, is about to fall into the hands of the Templars. The artifact is none other than the mythical broken spear of King Leonidas, Cassandra's grandfather. Although it's lost its power, the spear remains a very powerful weapon which could give the secrets of the Brotherhood away to the Templars were they to get a hold of it. Alessandra's exceptional combat skills have brought her to lead this particularly perilous mission. Unfortunately, the Brotherhood could not identify the Templars on the trail of the spear with certainty. We must proceed with the utmost caution. So you go through that level and you are rewarded with the spear, which, if I'm remembering, it's bonus. It does a good amount of damage. I think it does 3 damage potentially with the dice roll. But based off of your Brotherhood's, or no, Alessandra's level, it will deal additional damage. So if you deal 3 damage with the rolls and she's level 4, it ends up dealing 7 damage total, which is fantastic because you're talking about taking out anywhere from 4 crossbowmen in a square to up to 2 brute guards, which have 3 HP each, plus a crossbowman. So you can end up taking out a huge amount of people, or at times, and I've done this with the bosses, which have special requirements to the health. So I explained it in one of my levels. How the bosses work is that you have to deal damage equal to their current health to remove 1 health icon. And then you have to continue. So if they have 6 health, you have to deal 6 damage. And then they're brought down to 5 health. And then you have to deal 5 damage and so on and so forth. That damage can stack. So if she deals 7 damage, I could take a 4 health boss down to 2 health easily. But anyways, so that spear was put there. I don't remember exactly how it ended in Venice. But what's nice about these little stories is at the end, you learn that she grew up learning the stories of Cassandra from her mother. And I'm fairly certain, and I don't know specifically, but I want to say that she's an ancestor of Cassandra because she has such a tie to her story. Either that or her parents came from Greece.
Interesting. Venice had an empire, didn't it, in the Mediterranean at that point. So
yeah, so it was stored there at some point, whether it be that the Templars got a hold of it or the Assassins got a hold of it or just somebody got Herodotus' collection. I think that the AC Wiki may have some more backstory to that, so I would definitely recommend looking at that. But that was one of the first big surprises I saw was the Spear of Leonidas. And there's other weapons from the games that you find in there as well. So there's a lot of callbacks to those and to previous characters and stuff like that Cassandra being the only one that I can really think of outside of some of the weapons. I think at one point you may get one of Bayek's swords, but it doesn't say anything about Bayek. It's just the name of the it was one of the weapons that he had used, you know, so it's almost like a DLC add-on, you know, kind of thing.
Understood.
But yeah, so I guess just to wrap up that story real quick to give you guys a quick overview. The main game is you're developing the Brotherhood of Venice and you're trying to help Ezio with the Staff of Eden. The Roma expansion has you guys helping Claudia establish the Brotherhood in Rome and Ezio put away the Staff of Eden in the Colosseum. And then the Creed versus Crow multiplayer has your assassins, Ezio's assassins, versus the opposing player, which are Cesare's crows, which are like the anti-assassins. They have all of the same kind of skill qualities as the assassins do, but they're the Templars, you know, hitmen. So almost like fighting, you know, Team Sigma or something like that. And then the modern day Tokyo expansion, which Declan had, you know, mentioned his confusion to, there is information about one of the assassins in Venice that ties to the Templars in that the Templars have that assassin's DNA and they're and you as the Assassin Brotherhood both in the modern day or in the modern day are trying to keep that away from them. And in the main game you do get to play a few modern day story missions using one of the modern day assassins. I won't say because I'm not going to spoil it. And fight the modern day Templar order in all of their strength. And then this just wraps up the story. Leaves some stuff on a little bit of a, you know, what happened to this kind of thing. But it wraps up the story and the Tokyo expansion plays as one giant mission just broken up into segments.
I think I need to read your Tokyo thread to catch up on the story.
It's a pretty quick
read. I want to know what happens. I want to know. Yeah. But we won't spoil it today. I made many notes on my page and we've covered everything. Declan, did you have anything else you wanted to ask Michael?
No, everything's been covered. I'm now excited for the retail version because I may have to look into it because I have been following it for a while and I may buy some Power Ranger figures just for Animus hacks.
Do you know what you can finally do, Declan? You can get some little play dinosaur figures and you can have your dinosaurs
the Assassin's Creed dinosaurs.
Yep.
Even better.
There's actually a perfect space that would fit. One of the characters unlocks the ability of using a bear. And awesome. That would be great to replace that with a T-Rex.
Or even better, because Declan is a weirdo, Assassin's Creed Creed of Venice After Dark, and all the assassins are just werewolves. Every mission is a werewolf.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, and you can make up your own ability for the werewolf.
And the Templars are vampires? Have I just completely ruined the game?
Awesome. So, that's been a very good description of the game and how it came to be, the different parts that make it up. Really appreciate you coming on and talking us through it, Michael.
Yeah, not a problem. Always fun talking with you guys.
It's been too long. It's been far too long since you've been on.
So, if people here do want to know more about the game, you can always look for Michael on Twitter. I've currently did have the thread open, but I've lost it.
We'll put a link on our YouTube version of this episode for sure, and if we can fit it in the space on Spotify, we'll figure out how to do that as well. And but Michael's thread is great.
If you guys actually have been playing it as well, you can always reach out to the podcast at assassinscreed@gmail.com. Give us your thoughts on what you think of the story, how it plays, and the amazing figurines, which I'm like Michael, I would never paint because I can't even draw other than Stickmen, so imagine my painting. You can also reach us on Twitter at Assassin's Creed Let's Talk or at James Taylor Quid. And I forgot to do it last week because I was ill with COVID, but I am alive now, really well. Haha. 2 years and I finally caught the virus. I am not happy. But in the spirit of Ezio, you can currently get the Assassin's Creed Ezio Collection for Xbox One for $12.99 on CDKs, which is on sale for $39.99. And remember, you can get the links in the YouTube or in the audio description. And every purchase you make in CDKs actually does help the show grow a little bit. So if you do want to jump into Venice from Brotherhood, I would recommend the Ezio Collection because I kind of like Ezio games now. But that's all we've got time for this week, and we'll see you next week.
See you soon.